to the A-News Podcast. This is episode 26 for August 25th, 2017. This podcast covers anarchist activity, ideas, and conversations from the previous week on anarchistnews.org. This podcast is designed to be useful to anarchists and the anarcho-curious. Give us feedback and constructive criticism at our email address, podcast@anarchistnews.org. Most stories have more information and some fun commentary at the non-sectarian anarchist news site, anarchistnews.org. Editorial on words. Last week, I read some from a political reporter who was troubling the idea that left and right are clearly demarcated categories with everyone more or less agreeing on what they mean. It cited a poll that showed that many people think what seems to me like an obvious fallacy, for example, that the left wing is against gun control or that the right wing is for affirmative action. Reading that was meant to be an opening into the question of what we're actually getting at when we talk about right wing and left wing, and maybe liberal, radical, and conservative also. To me, this feels important because of a tendency I see these days to flatten conversations into for us, against us pronouncements. The Dr. Bones Wolfie hoopla is one example. The idea that Alexander Reed Ross promotes of fascism creeping into conversations that question morality or humanism is another. There are many more, of course. So last week I brought up the idea that right and left are not clear, even though the people who use the terms act like they are. Last week I also touched briefly on the idea that what jargon is good for isn't being clear, but is delineating teams. As someone who likes diversity, who enjoys a good disagreement, I am fully supportive of teams, just to get that out of the way. But a good disagreement is one where people are clear on what they're actually disagreeing about. Calling people names, postmodern, for example, or post-left, or fascist, or anti-fascist, isn't getting at what is actually going on between people. Here's an example from my experience. I visit a website that doesn't allow anarcho-capitalists to post. That kind of prohibition can only be partial, because anyone could go to that site and talk about things that are not alerts for ANCAP thought. And while that might be aesthetically distressing, it's probably a good thing. The thing I actually don't like about talking with ANCAPs, who have been recognizable as such, is that they insist on their own definitions of capitalism, they insist that other people use their definitions, and that they want to pick fights on territory that is explicitly not theirs, i.e. their bad guests. If ANCAPs are on the site but don't want to act like that, if they want to talk about other things, then I recognize that they might have different new perspectives that I can learn from. This is to say that I explicitly reject the idea of purity. I don't think that people must be purely good for anything that they say to be worthwhile, accurate, and/or valid. I am not even going to get into the discussion of whether anyone can be purely good, which is obviously stupid, because it's unnecessary for the point I'm trying to make. When I came up, it was clear to me that we're all sexist. We're all racist. We're all civilized, if you want to go there. We're all social creatures who have been raised in a culture that teaches fucked up values. The point is not to act like that is not true. Acting like it's not true is part of a system of hiding, of pretense, of accusing the other person before you're accused. Some future editorial will definitely be about big names and how deeply non-anarchist and disrespectful it is to imply that all people in a social circle are merely followers of whoever is the most recognizable public figure, invariably a man. Not that that ever happens to me or any fucking thing, goddamn. First you wanna go to the left, then you wanna turn right. Wanna argue all day, make a love all night. First you're up, then you're down, and in between. Oh, I really wanna know, what do you mean? What's new this week? Jaggi Singh responds to Mayor Regis Labome. The mayor of Quebec City has railed against anti-racist protesters and specifically Jaggi Singh. This is Jaggi's response. Quote, importantly, it's clear that neither the mayor nor the police of Quebec City are capable of dealing with the far-right racist threat in their city, and in significant ways they are complicit in the rise of the far-right. Instead, anti-fascist activists from Quebec City, Montreal, and beyond will rely on the model of grassroots organizing involving popular education, supporting migrants and other communities under attack, and yes, engaging in direct action to confront far-right racists and fascists when necessary. Unquote.
An Intimate History of Antifa, from the New Yorker magazine. This is a reasonably positive and supportive, if somewhat skeptical, review of a new book called Antifa, the Anti-Fascist Handbook, written by an ex-Occupy organizer with ties to Antifa. It does bring up the ongoing concern about what makes one group of violent people different from another group of violent people which gets tiresome, but at least it is thoughtful about the question, not knee-jerk. Quote, last week, the North Dakota newspaper, The Forum, published a letter from Pierce Tuft in which he recalled a chilling exchange about free speech with his son, Peter, shortly before Peter headed to the rally in Charlottesville. The thing about us fascists is, it's not that we don't believe in freedom of speech, the younger Tuft reportedly said to his father. You can say whatever you want. We'll just throw you in an oven. For Bray and his subjects, the horror of this story and the threat of its return demands that citizens, in the absence of state suppression of fascism, take action themselves. Bray notes that state-based protections failed in Italy and Germany, where fascists were able to take over governments through legal rather than revolutionary means. Much as the alt-right frames its activities as a defense of free speech, fascists were able to spread their ideology under the aegis of liberal tolerance. Antifa does not abide by John Milton's dictum that, in a free and open encounter, truthful ideas will prevail. After Auschwitz and Treblinka, Bray writes, anti-fascists committed themselves to fighting to the death the ability of organized Nazis to say anything. Unquote. I do appreciate that the reviewer points out that Antifa is a rebuttal to the idea that information is all that people need to become righteous, the liberal humanist idea par excellence.
Anger into action, anti-gentrification attacks this summer in Hamilton. A report back on some actions that are widely reproducible. Quote, with these actions, we remind ourselves that we're not powerless and that those who profit off our worsening living conditions, even with all their access and power, are still within reach. We don't pretend these attacks will stop gentrification in themselves, but we can at least refuse to greet these profiteers with smiles and break the illusion that what's good for investors is good for all of us. These attacks are easy to do, and the list below is just a few that we can claim, but every day we walk around the city and see manifestations of hostility towards both the established local rich and the vultures who have recently descended. It makes us happy to know other people we've never met feel the way we do, and by sharing this account, we hope to encourage others to turn their anger into offensive action. Unquote.
Transcripts to Leila Abdelrahim radio interview, Anarcho-Primitivism, Civilization, Symbolic Culture, and Rewilding. From feministprimitivism.org, which says about itself, quote, evolutionary explanations justifying certain modern human ways worthy of bringing into a future primitive tend to be overgeneralized, partial, and biased narratives. There are less totalizing narratives to explain the same more reflective of early human experiences and a human-animal way forward. Selecting which version of past to hold and which to reject has been a process of creating a more comfortable soft caveman that this site rejects and replaces, unquote. This interview was between two primitivists who don't take too much for granted, which is a nice change. Quote, host, one way that I conceptualize anarcho-primitivism is this distinction between more orthodox forms of leftism. They root their critique in capitalism as the basis of so many social ills that are promoted through the economic paradigm of capitalism. Anarcho-primitivists, in my understanding at least, would say that capitalism itself is a manifestation of a further, deeper ill, and that ill is civilization. Would you agree with that framing? Leila, exactly. Host, how would you define civilization, and maybe you could touch on the agricultural revolution here. So when did civilization start, and what is fundamentally wrong with civilization? Leila, in my work, civilization is the byproduct of certain cultural and sociocultural, socio-environmental decisions of certain humans to domesticate non-humans, and then eventually it led to humans domesticating humans as well. Sedentary and labor-oriented predatory social organization, unquote.
On the International Solidarity Week for Anarchist Prisoners, August 23rd to 30th, by Radio Fragmata in Greece, from 325, a statement on the situation of anarchists inside and outside of prison as understood by Radio Fragmata, quote, along with the heavy, devastating sentences to the political prisoners, as well as the incessant repression and curtailment of freedoms of the fighters outside the walls, the most recent additions in the list of the vengeful state practices are the violent elicitation of genetic material and consequently the fabricated evidence of guilt, the custodies under no evidence based on fictional accusations, the criminalization of friends, partners, and relatives of the prisoners, the denial of permissions for prison leaves claimed and established after exhausting struggles from within the prisons, the vengeful transfers and solitary confinements, all these serving as an exemplification to those revolting against the imposed prisons with or without jails. Unquote.
14 tips on how to get ready for the revolutionary situation, Belarus, from 325. A list of equipment and activities to be prepared. Quote, to write this article, we adopted the experience of people's struggle in Ukrainian Maidan, successes and failures of recent anti-governmental protests in Belarus and Russia, and analyzed the capacities and repressive tactics of police and intelligence in our country in last years. Though these tips were written, first of all, for comrades from above-mentioned countries, they may be useful for anarchists in any part of the world. We live in very troubled times. Well, they can't be untroubled, taking into account global capitalism and never-relenting class war. It's just a question of time when the state system ends because of the social revolution, civil war, foreign intervention, or ecological catastrophe. This is why, in an extreme situation, when the common way of life collapses and a single human life has no value, the anarchists and the anti-authoritarians should be ready to stay alive and to save lives of their comrades in order to fight together and live up to their principles. Unquote.
Statement from Eric Clanton. Keep building long-term strategies. Eric was arrested as part of a campaign that started on the internet, another indication of the emerging tactics of the cops and other state forces. Quote, dealing with an unintelligible internet force smearing and threatening me online was not easy and created stress, to say the least, but I had every expectation that very few people would take them seriously, especially considering the character and credibility of their sources. However, 5 weeks later, the Berkeley police smashed into two houses, held guns to people's heads, handcuffed, verbally abused, and stole the belongings of over a dozen people, including their books and zines. All of this after my attorney, Dan Siegel, had reached out to Berkeley police on my behalf, and all on the basis of an investigation that largely involved detectives reading far-right forum posts and studying unverified YouTube videos. When I was interviewed at the police station, Detective Hong had the nerve to say to me, "The internet did the work for us." My case threatens to set a new standard in which right-wing extremists can select targets for repression and have police enthusiastically and forcefully pursue them. Unquote.
Take what's yours, anarcho outlaw, submitted by Anonymous. This is a call out for submissions to a zine. Quote, an anarchist's life can be an incarnation of what came before. Echoing throughout linear time are the instances of anarchists, outsiders, and outlaws that reinforce each other. Their stories have the capacity to inspire strength and creativity, whether from the past or from this moment. I want this zine to include stories of your favorite criminal exploits, illegalist rants, modern hunters and foragers' tales, and jabs at the martyrdom of the milieu. Anarchy needs more outlaws. This is outlaw theory. Unquote. This got some grief on ANews about the risk of implicating oneself through these kinds of stories, although it is supposed to be a theory zine, for what that's worth.
Media. Anathema, Volume 3, Issue 6. This issue celebrates the return of some coyotes, has thumbnails about some actions, brief thoughts on Charlottesville, a call-out for the International Week for Anarchist Prisoners, a pro-direct action column, thoughts on the vulnerabilities of most statues, Midwest pipeline sabotage, and more.
Podcasts. Anarchy Radio, August 22nd, 2017. Always only an hour. Thoughts on anti-fascism, naval foibles, tech taking over brains, and problem-solving skills, coral and kelp forests disappearing globally, catastrophic effects of deforestation, allergies, nurturing machines, Cliff brings the philosophy, which is a nice break, Jay-Z refuses the idea that language is subjective because that would preclude action, Jay-Z calls out A as the source of all noxiousness because women are not able to have their own thoughts and must merely follow the ideas of whatever man is around. Good to know. He promptly follows that up by an appeal to essentialism and the idea that women are not as interested in tech because we're healthier, as opposed to because we are discriminated against.
The Final Straw Radio, Free Kara Wilde plus Conflict in the Movement. This is only an hour and 5 minutes. The two segments are first information about Kara Wilde and her case. She's an artist, witch, squatter, trans woman from the USA who was arrested in protests in France. And second, an experimental interview with an unnamed European about conflict in unnamed European groups. The point of the relative anonymity being to focus on the content and not create more unhelpful drama. Sean Swain's segment starts at about 8 minutes in. He discusses a letter he wrote to another more mainstream candidate for Ohio governor. He challenges the candidate to a wrestling match and promises again that he has no contact with Russian hackers. The interview with the supporter for Kara Wilde goes into protests in France, which were against new labor laws, and also the specific ways that cops mess with trans folks. Kara has done two zines while in prison, one about trains, the other about polyamory. Letters are always good, especially from the U.S., and there is info on what mail is allowed in to French prisons. The second part starts at 43 minutes. This part is Bursts talking to someone, and since we don't know where the someone is talking about, we can't contextualize the person's issues. For me, this particular experiment did not work, perhaps because I am not flexible enough. The interviewed person discusses the problem with people who go to assemblies having already decided what they're going to talk about, which disempowers people who are not in the circles who have made these decisions. Against that, I have stories from friends who have attended Greek anarchist assemblies, which are explicitly not about making decisions as a group, but airing sessions where different groups can talk about what they're doing, purely communicating with each other, not planning together. Obviously, both methods have strengths and weaknesses, but without the context, it's hard to know if this is someone who is coming to that kind of an assembly with expectations from somewhere else. That said, I think this kind of experiment is probably worth doing again, even if it risks monoculturaling resistance. The sexism they talk about is common, unfortunately.
Bad News, Angry Voices from Around the World, Episode 3, August 2017. This episode is only about 40 minutes. Bad News is a composite production of different podcasts from various international projects. This episode features Radio Kuruf on government social care projects, 98FM with an update on resistances to state repression of political activists, The Final Straw on Katie Yao and grand juries in the U.S., this section is quite informative and useful for U.S. anarchist audiences. A Radio Berlin talks about the disappearance of Santiago Maldonado and the Mapuche struggles in Argentina to reclaim Benetton-owned land. And finally, Dissident Island on the issue of abortion on the island of Ireland and with an update from anti-fracking protests in Lancashire.
Topic of the week. What do you say to non-anarchists? How often do you talk to people who you disagree with? How do you talk to them? Are they people you've known for a long time? Old friends who went in different directions from you? Family members? Co-workers, students, neighborhood folks? What have you noticed about how you relate to them, what you don't challenge, and what it's based on? There's a group I've been in for some time, and people in the group say really stupid things, and I don't always confront them immediately for a variety of reasons, usually like they're too old, and I don't think they're going to act on anything dumb. And I know that they know I disagree with them already, and they're ready for people to complain about what they just said, and I'd rather wait until I think they can hear me better. And I know that I'll see them again, and so there's no sense of urgency. The point is, multiple reasons are in effect for me to say something, or not to say something, and also in how I say something or not. Do I laugh, roll my eyes, turn away, and start another conversation? What are yours? And joining me this week is Scott Crow, who has some things about talking to non-anarchists. Some things to say, that is. Hey, Scott, how are you doing?
I'm great. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah. So what are your initial thoughts on this question?
Well, you know, I'm all about networking and making connections, not just interpersonal ones, but I think that, you know, as societies, that we, networks is what we have, right? Whether we call it family or our neighborhoods or communities or political movements, whatever language we use, we're all looking for connections, right? And I think that there are certain bases that we can come and come through. So when I talk to non-anarchists, are people who hadn't even thought about the ideas of anarchy. There's two things that are happening. One, I'm presenting what has been traditionally shown as a scary set of ideas, you know, bomb throwing, all the typical things that we think about. And then the other thing is I'm actually trying to make real connections with people and to meet them where they're at, to see if there's an opening in that. And sometimes that just starts with the basics of it. And, you know, like, I mean, like meeting people where they're at, like people in my family, they're in East Texas. Some of them would be militia members, possibly. They're racist in the way that people are racist in the United States everywhere, but not any extra racist. So I might meet with them and say, you know, they're like, they might to me in a didn't, you know, like some family conversation, like, why do you want to break the law all the time? And I'm like, but you break the law every day. You just don't think about it. And so it gives them an opening to begin to think about things that they might do where they have more self-control or more liberatory potential than they actually realize. And so that's one of the ways to do it.
I've been working a job for the past little while, and so those are the main non-anarchists I've been exposed to lately. And I tend to find that that as long as I can keep the conversation on a sort of focus on content, so for instance, you know, I can talk to them about the Trump phenomena as long as I don't talk about Trump himself, you know, instead talk about, like, you know, why are there certain sort of mechanisms of talking about the state of the country that work for certain people and don't work for others. I work with someone who's a Bernie bro, and, you know, a lot of course, the things he likes about Bernie are the same things that someone would like about Trump.
Right. Well, think about this. One of the things that I definitely, when having the conversations like you're talking about in workplaces and things, is that I never want to try to convince anybody of anything. I'm not there to convert people. And I think that one of the misconceptions that we have is that if people disagree, then we're not able to convert them. Well, if we stop trying to convert people and we just want to share ideas for really real and actually meet people where they're at, it becomes a different conversation. You can have that Bernie bro conversation with somebody, and you can show different aspects of it that they can listen to, or the Trumpian conversation with somebody to show. I mean, because even, you know, like, funny enough, I mean, even the tiny-handed orange one who claims to be the president, it's really funny because that guy's destroying the inside of established systems that people from the outside, like anarchists, could never do. So there's actually some common ground in talking about that, even if you disagree with everything else that person's doing. They're absolutely destroying stuff on the inside. So there's a point of conversation. And again, if you're not trying to convince or you're not trying to convert, then it doesn't matter. Just it opens up the potential. I think I'm okay for that.
One of the things I tend to try to do with these topics of the week is I spend the first bit of it sort of accepting the premise of the question and sort of getting involved in that. And then, of course, during the second half, I try to question the premise of the question.
Yep.
And, you know, one of the things I do have to admit that it has been a pet peeve of mine for years about anarchism is the idea that it is a movement of people trying to convince other people of the correctness of itself as a perspective.
Agreed.
And it's been one of the sort of strange things about the sort of what I would call like post-anarchist moment, where there's a lot of people, you know, and I think this is best represented by the website It's Going Down, who they still desire something like the insurrectionary zeal that they had mm-hmm. within anarchism, but anarchism mm-hmm. itself is sort of seen as a straitjacket and limiting them in what their actual desires are, which is just to, you know, sort of fuck shit up in the context of this system here and now. And so in that vein, I think that anarchism as like a kind of talking therapy, I think that there is sort of a limit there that's worth reflecting on.
Right. But also, if I could expand that even, like, where I'm coming at from is we're talking about multiple overlapping subcultures, right? Mm-hmm. So you have different strains of anarchist subcultures, you know, that may or may not always disagree, different tendencies, right? But then you also have activist culture, which we've talked about before, that overlays much of this. And then, and then larger than that, you have leftist subculture, and then, of course, American subculture. And there's many myriads of others, the punk rock subculture. But all of these have different points of intersections, right? They all don't have the same ethos to them, right? But they have crossover ethos. So we look at them as a mass swirl of that. That the activism one, which again you and I have had conversations about, is the overlay that people don't come to very often, or they don't think about it. That anarchy is activism, and I've been there. You know, I've been there. You know, and I think many people in North America and the United States actually have been there, because that's where. Besides punk rock, probably the largest exposure to anarchist ideas has come in the last 15 or 20 years. And so I think that when people, possibly like on the website that you talked about, or anybody comes in, what happens is they get shoved into these certain channels of like, anarchy can only look like this particular thing. It's only going to look insurrectionary because that's the way I came in, or it's only going to look like radical environmental stuff because that's where I came in, or it's only going to look like Wobblies and Northeastern Federation of Anarchists, you know, they used to exist, you know what I'm saying, like the red and black. Mm-hmm. And so, sure. but it's hard for people to see outside of that. And I think that, like, culturally, this one of the things I think is that even though anarchy is about total liberation, right, from the inside out, that many anarchists, people who ascribe to the ideas of, or advocate for these ideas, still get stuck, and they get stuck in anarchism instead of anarchy, right? The anarchy being the open possibilities that you've talked about for a long time or written about, or anarchism, which is becomes a set of ideologies that we get stuck in. And interesting, when anarchist subcultures, when I cross over them, that I run into this, that they may be liberatory in very many ways, but very, very, very ossified in very other ways.
Well, but I think one of the ways in which most anarchists are the most ossified is in refusing to talk to people who don't already speak their language.
Right. And you know, like, I mean, however you want to say it, like, I think because our political movements, our political ruptures, whatever we want to call them, every time something rises up, like the anti-war movement or the alternative globalization movements or Occupy or now the Antifa movements, like, it brings people in and they don't have a lot of political maturity. And this is not a criticism of all of us, because we all have to come into things. We have to be motivated to come in, but then we don't retain people, and so they often leave before they get to develop their analysis and why they're in these political engagements or these socio-political engagements or whatever they are. Really, what you have is you have people trying to figure out who they are and what they stand for. And usually, by the time they realize that they're not just against things culturally, that they're actually for something, they usually have left and gone to live their lives. Yeah. And so what we end up with is a cycle over and over again of people coming in because they're angry and disaffected and the states of refusal, and then trying to figure out who they are and their identity in that. I don't mean like just like person of color, whatever the identities that we have, the overlapping identities. And then figuring out what they're against. I'm against this, 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 and this. But then when you get to the questions like, what is it that you're for? They begin to leave. And I think that puts us in a perpetual state, and subculturally of these overlapping subcultures that are stagnated, or not stagnated, they grow, but they just don't grow. They grow in giant ruptures that don't develop very long, I guess.
Well,
I could say.
I like the way in which you've named the problem. How do you feel like you've had success disrupting this?
Well, I think doing interventions, because I think there's more people than just angry people who want to come into movements. And so I have actually tried to reach outside of the anarchist subcultures, or the regular subcultures that we cross over, the traditional activist subcultures, the nonprofit subcultures, whatever they are, to actually outside and just to talk to people in other worlds, people in rural areas, people in
So what's give an example of a successful
I live in Texas, right? So it's like it's a pretty much a libertarian state run by Christian conservatives, businessmen, you know. And so libertarian, big L libertarian guys, and then there's the spectrum of that, right? The Libertarian Party's big in Texas. So, but ignoring maybe some of them because they're tied in, they're definitely tied into political structures. There's the people that of all stripes within that libertarian thing that don't identify as anarchist in the way that we would talk about it in quote unquote leftist circles. So over the last few years, I've been able to reach them by having talks. Like I've been talking in spaces that are not just specifically anarchist or liberal or progressive or radical or all the traditional leftist trappings, and actually try to go to other places where these people might be to talk to them about stuff, making sure that literature is available. Like I spoke at what they have the Porcupine Festival in New Hampshire, thank you, which is just like an Earth First gathering basically, except it's larger scale and more organized
and libertarian.
And I was very libertarian. But the thing is, like, you know, there's a diversity there that I don't see in many leftist circles, right? Like age diversity, rural and city people. There's some more diversity. And it's very interesting because watching them develop things that are very similar, right? Like they don't have food, not bombs, but they've got something that matches that, right? Mm-hmm. I can't remember what the title of it is now, but being able to do interventions within that, because I'm not there to convince anybody, and I'm not doing this just as an individual, like, hey, look at me. I'm like, we have common ideas here. Are there enough commonalities that there might be ruptures to work together or something? And again, this is not coalition building. This is nothing. This is just basically at the heart of people. And so,
but it sounds like your one line answer to the question, how do you talk to non-anarchists, is go to them.
It is. You have to go to them. I think that's a good summary of that, because if we expect people to come to us, this has always been a problem in any political, social organizing and engagement. If we always expect people to come to us, and I'm like, well, they're not going to. If we want to intersect with people who are outside of ours, truly, and I'm not only talking about people who might be in more agreeance. I'm not trying to get the most extreme white nationalists have come to, you know, like to try to make inroads with them, but people who are in more agreement, because we have a limited time on this planet, and there's only, you know, like we need to work with people or at least intersect with people, I think, who are more in alignment than far less in alignment, but not people who are too much in alignment where we don't get out of our own subculture.
Well, thank you very much for this.
Yeah, thank you for the time. I super appreciate it.
You make me crazy when you
Anarchy 101 question and some answers. In this segment, we take questions and some of the answers and responses from the website anarchy101.org, a user-moderated Q&A site for anarchists to answer questions on anarchist thought and activity. Most questions on the site have a lot of commentary that we don't read, but is certainly a lot of fun. The question this week is, what is the difference between consensus and direct democracy? First answer. I think at least part of it would be that direct democracy entails law and rulership of individuals by collective decisions, where collective decisions are reached through a predefined and systematized process to which all participants have consented. This process can be based on consensus, but it doesn't have to be. Direct democracy is just democracy without delegates, representatives. It can take place within the framework of a state, outside it, or alongside it. Direct democracy requires consensus about how decisions are made, but does not require consensus over the decisions themselves. When we talk about consensus, we tend to talk about it as a separate but often related process, especially if we're discussing ways of participating in and structuring activist movements and activities, sometimes intended as a proof of concept model for some assertion of optimal direct democracy that could replace representative liberal democracy. We have Occupy Wall Street and its jazz hands, Spirit Fingers, to thank for that. In this context, consensus is more about negotiating differing views on the participants' immediate activities and trying to manufacture unity in a protest movement. I suppose you could also say that consensus seeks to submit collective decisions to the rulership of individuals if you wanted to formulate a neat binary definition of the two terms. The ending comment on that thread is, consensus does not require that a participant submit to the will of any others. They are free to disengage, disassociate from the process, and do whatever they like individually, though this may pit them against the rest of the group. Rather, the goal of consensus, as I understand it, is to get to a point through discussion, negotiation, argument, etc., where if a collective decision is made, then everybody involved in that decision has agreed to it. Nobody is submitting to anybody in that case if everyone is strong enough to speak their mind and stand their ground. However, many groups that use consensus decision-making actually qualify it with variants, such as consensus minus one, where if everybody except one person agrees, then the decision is made despite the lack of 100% consensus. In some situations, I can actually see that making sense. In fact, I've been involved in situations where it does, but it does leave that one individual out of the decision, so to speak. As always, if you don't like these answers or if you have your own question to ask, visit anarchy101.org and join the conversation. This podcast is the effort of many people. This week, the podcast was sound edited by Lynn O'Mabel, written by Jackie. The editorial was written by Chisel. It was narrated by Chisel and a friend. We thank Aragorn and Scott Crow for their help with the topic of the week. Contact us at podcast@anarchistnews.org. To learn more, books, pamphlets, t-shirts, and other anarchist materials are available at littleblackcart.com. News and up-to-the-minute commentary at anarchistnews.org.